Welcome to MGO Podcast 4.4. I beg you, people. Nebraska has suffered enough. Do not search out Scott Frost's mom and hit her with a shovel. She doesn't deserve it. Go podcast 4.4 live from how many conference rooms does this place have anymore?
Not many.
We are live from the residence in Ann Arbor downtown.
We've gained a whiteboard.
We've got a whiteboard in our room.
We have no boxes.
There are no boxes. And we hear the sounds of destruction in the background as the Nebraska conference room is destroyed for Rutgers-like activities.
Or maybe it's being renovated.
No.
No. All right.
You get one conference room a year, and when you blow it, it's gone. So we're down to 12, at least. No, 11, because Ohio State had their conference room revoked preseason.
Michigan State.
Before we get into things, we would like to thank our sponsors. They have, of course, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus. So, Michigan has a much more relaxing day against Nebraska than I think anybody anticipated, even the people who were like, yes, that Vegas line is an accurate Vegas line. It was not, but in a different way than I thought it was going to be inaccurate.
I believe maybe one of the best ways to sum that up would be, well, that escalated quickly.
It did. So Michigan's up 14-0 in the blink of an eye, and things just kind of go from there. So you have kind of one of these weird days where your quarterback throws for 120 yards, but it's just because the game was out of hand so quickly.
Yeah, and he had a couple other downfield throws that we could have argued were right there.
Yeah. So I don't want to like get into the referee assaults until the defensive section. But I do think that in a game that's relatively close, you see those downfield throws to Collins and Martin both flagged. The Martin one was pretty clear to me. When a defensive back kind of reaches over your back and starts tackling you before the ball gets there, you usually get that call.
Yeah, and I think that it took me until I watched on replay to tell, because like the angle that I was at, he was basically like they're both diving right away from me. Yeah. So I couldn't tell the timing of it. But on replay, when you look at it from a couple different angles, it looks like he gets it a little early.
And then the Collins bomb right at the end of the second half, which should never have happened, but we'll get into that later, also seemed like a pretty clear instance of the referees being like, let's just ref the score and get out of here.
Yeah. So, well, and that, I'll take those situations, I guess.
Yeah, and so I don't really think that 5.5 yards an attempt for Patterson is any need for concern, because Michigan didn't need the passing game to provide any big plays, because as soon as they ran one play, they got a huge gain. All those big running plays were down G, where the running back goes quickly off tackle and Michigan pulls the play side guard just to get him a crease. And I hadn't thought that that could be kind of a base play, but I think against Nebraska's defense, it made a lot of sense.
Well, and you were talking about when we were preparing it, that they kind of futzed with it a little bit and used Mason in a different way.
So the Higdon touchdown, you have kind of like a Rich Rod era two-back set with Mason in the backfield. They insert him on the backside of the line. And I don't know if they had seen this on tape or if they just got lucky and Nebraska couldn't handle it very well. But the playside linebacker like follows Ben Mason. And then you have kind of a moment where both Nebraska linebackers can hold hands. Not good. Not good. And so when Higdon bursts through that first level, there's nobody there. And I think that was something that Michigan saw on tape and thought that they could get. And they didn't know that they didn't have to pull some stuff out of the barn against Nebraska. They could have just run whatever they wanted and
some
get touchdowns.
Vanilla base offense.
Right. But so they had kind of their early script, and that worked brilliantly well. So,
well, hooray scouting team.
So, you know, the one thing that you get a little bit concerned about with down G is that if both linebackers read it and flow quickly, you're down a man because you don't have like a lead fullback. So that's something that I don't think you can make a base play just because you can't block everybody if the linebackers read it. But so far, so good with having the linebackers not read it, despite the fact that Michigan ran it constantly.
Yes.
So our question before this game and the game preview was like, how quickly can Nebraska come back from being one of the worst defenses in the country? And the answer is not quite that quickly.
Well, Seth, when he was like looking at it, put some black shirts on a few players. But like when you just get mauled on the offensive line, like, or by the opponent's offensive line like that, I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, and you know, I think the down G stuff was strategic and it relied on Higdon being good at that particular play. Then when they get inside the 10 and they put Ben Mason in the Siona Huma role.
They put him as the feature back.
Well, I mean, Huma had like some single back snaps.
Did he?
He did.
Just where it was just him and just like
just
deep
him.
Set.
Yeah. So, and they're, you know, he gets the first one and it's like, you know, that's a short yard situation and he just kind of mauls his way down to the 5.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I'll just do that 4 more times. And I kind of like, so Zach Gentry's touchdown in this game, I was annoyed at because like, you know, Patterson's like dropping back and he's getting some pressure and one of the Nebraska guys falls down and then it's a wide open touchdown. But I was just like, why even risk that? Because you have a situation where Ben Mason is able to just have walk-in touchdowns from the 2.
See if he can pass Khalid Hill on number of touchdowns in a year.
I know I'm demanding more fullback touchdowns in a game where Michigan had 3. But I mean, I know you have to like mix it up a little bit.
Sure.
That was my immediate reaction. It's like, this is just risk for no purpose. And that was because Michigan's offensive line really was blowing these guys off the ball when it came to like power plays.
And that's what we started seeing in last year, but then also in even the fall preview and everything has continued as they've been able to run block and, you know, their opponent caveats. But when they can move the ball like that and then set up the pass, like that just is going to create a ton more space for wide receivers. And
well, yeah, I mean, last year Michigan was really good on the ground and people got aggressive about it. And then not the people Jones would streak open.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't work out as well as people would hope.
You have to hit those from time to time.
And I think Michigan has the quarterback to do that now. So if they can really ramp up the run game to where it was last year, which they haven't really yet, then you could really see those hits over the top becoming common.
Yeah, and I just kind of wonder, I mean, they have to have a few other wrinkles that they're saving for other games, probably notably like Wisconsin or Michigan State, but
absolutely.
They've had enough success, I think, in the last few weeks against these types of defensive lines or front sevens that they can, like you said, run kind of 1-2-ish plays and have that kind of success.
Well, and you know, you're beginning to see kind of the depth that Michigan's run game can have. So they had a couple of tweaks in this game. They managed to get something that was vaguely resembling a crack sweep off. Mm-hmm. Without being in a very crack sweep formation. So, you know, they had the one against Notre Dame, which just got eaten up because they put it on tape so much last year that everybody's prepared for it.
Right.
So you're able to mix it up a little bit and kind of get that same action without exposing yourself to the prepared response. Maybe. I mean, Nebraska's off defense was not particularly well organized.
Right.
So, I mean, I was a little bit concerned early in the year that things were very, very vanilla, but I think a lot of that is the fact that they moved to Ed Warner. He's got to kind of get a base in, and they got to run that base and get that settled, and then they can move on to some other stuff. And even last week, they had a lot of mental errors. So, you know, I feel like, you know, they can only add stuff gradually, and we're not going to see a fully weaponized run game for a while, but when we do, it will be fun.
I think so.
Do we have anything else about the starters? Higdon came back and looked much more tackle breaky than Evans did last week. I think that's something to note. Like, I thought Evans kind of got the short side of the short end of the stick on some bad blocking plays, but Higdon's better able to rescue those.
Yeah, he's definitely better between the tackles and breaking them and when people are hitting him. I think Evans is kind of the guy maybe you want more in space. And, yeah. I mean, that's not new. But
no, that's not new.
But, I mean, you could see that in some of the plays that they ran on Saturday. It was just that he was kind of the guy you want in those situations.
One more thing from an actual starter is that Nico Collins had a really good catch on a corner route where
yes,
the pretty much the only long play I think Patterson hit where he was able to just put it in on the sideline and
got his feet down. And yeah, that was kind of the thing to me was like, it's one thing to catch the ball, but the other one to have the awareness of where you are and then to be able to get your feet and tap them like that.
Yep, yep. So then it's on to the plethora of backups that we saw, including Dylan McCaffrey, who came in as the second quarterback. And we're now, I think, 3 weeks removed from the
Peters injury
talk.
Yes.
So it kind of feels like he is just the number two quarterback and will be the main competition going forward for Joe Milton. I mean, I don't want to write off Brandon Peters, but, you know.
But McCaffrey looks good. Like, this isn't, I mean, like, we talked about, okay, maybe arm strength and such, but, like, he looks like he moves around really well. And
he did have a 75-yard touchdown.
Where he outran a secondary. Back.
Yeah, that was strange. I mean.
Well, it's like, you see those plays where the play design is what gets the initial opening, and you see then the quarterback or the ball carrier get through the hole, and then you see everybody, like, react to it, and you're like, okay, how much of a head start does he have before everybody catches him? And it's usually 5-10 yards, depending on how quick the guy is. And then he just kind of keeps going and going, and then the safety kind of narrows his angle, and he keeps going and going, and then all of a sudden he's not catching him, and he's at, like, the inside the 50 and the 30, and you're like, I think he's going to pull away?
And, like, I don't know how well-regarded Nebraska safeties are, but they have a top 100 guy at corner who's like 6'3" and can run. And DiCaprio Boodle, who I think was the guy who got held.
Okay.
So he wasn't relevant to the play. But, like, if you're out running safeties and you're Dylan McCaffrey, like, geez.
I mean, it could say more about Nebraska's defense. But, when you have a quarterback that can finish a run like that, it's been a minute before Michigan's had a guy like that.
And then he dropped in two deep balls, one of which was perfect, the one to Ronnie Bell. And the other one was very good. So he hits Ambry Thomas over the top, and he turns Ambry Thomas around, but does kind of, I mean, it's a little bit difficult, but it's definitely a deep ball that should be caught.
It hits him in the hands.
Yeah, it hits him in the hands.
You gotta.
And that was kind of my main concern coming out of the Notre Dame game. It's like, I don't know how confident I feel about Dylan McCaffrey throwing more than 5 yards downfield.
Well,
now that seems
The one to Bell was perfect.
Yeah.
So he's the guy kind of like in the Collins mold where you're like, all right, this guy's a big leapy guy, right? Who's going to go up and get a rebound of a jump ball.
Yeah.
And he goes by a corner and then gets hit in stride, catches, and then pulls away.
Well, the corner actually chucked him. So, and he's like off balance for a second. And so when he catches the ball, I don't think he's fully gathered, and he's able to reach out and pluck it and keep his balance. So yeah, that seemed like a pretty good sign for Ronnie Bell.
Yeah. I mean,
the mere fact that they're not redshirting him means that they think they have something, I think.
Yeah. I think so. I don't know who, I don't think Michigan loses anyone in the off season, because I don't think anyone's eligible aside from Perry. So,
well, Perry,
right? Obviously, he's gone. But, like, it's not, you know, they get Black back, and I mean, it's not like they don't have other guys, and he's still finding a way to get time throughout all four games this year.
Right. You could definitely redshirt him if you thought you wanted.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that goes back to like the Black thing where we're talking about, you know, well, what does this do to Michigan's wide receiver core, and they don't have many people. But, you know, the other thing is like they have a bunch of tight ends and they split them out and use them in different ways. So they have pass catchers that they can line up all over the field. And I think that, like you said, it says a lot about Ronnie Bell that he's finding a way to be a part of that when there's kind of through four games not really a reason to, other than the fact that maybe he's just good.
Yep. One more thing on Dylan McCaffrey. I liked how when they rolled him out on the waggles, he was really comfortable taking the second option.
Yes.
So, the flat would be covered, and then he'd have that kind of like a slightly difficult throw to the second level where the guy's running free, but you might have a player or two in front. It's a little bit of an uncomfortable throw for a quarterback, I think. And I think he hit it two or three times.
He had three completions.
Okay, so two times.
that is a play or a route that will kind of tell you what he can do with a progression, because you have to make those reads and then sit. Right. And when you're doing it on the run is very different than when you're in the pocket too.
And you're always reading those either low to high or high to low.
Right.
So that's always your second option. So he's probably checking the flat first and being like, I don't like that, and then coming to a deeper option, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So he looks in control. He looks in command. He looks like a McCaffrey.
he did throw downfield to McCurry in the end zone when I think that he had Bell on the sideline pretty wide open and might have just wanted a touchdown. But.
Yeah, there were a couple of late throws that were just kind of like YOLO throws from both him and Peters.
Yeah, I think I don't care about those because, right. I mean, if he would have hit Bell on the sideline, that would just be another piece of evidence where you're just like, oh man, great find there. And you saw the route there. But, you know, when you've already made a couple, you've dropped a couple of dimes in those situations, and then you're kind of like, I kind of want six. And
so we're going to talk about Ambry at wide receiver, though, because he was wide open.
I think he's fast.
He is fast. And I mean, we haven't really seen much of him at cornerback.
Not too much. Not in any relevant time.
No. And, you know, he's getting a little bit of time on offense, and I wonder if they can manage to do something with him where he's like a better version of the, you know, they had Peppers on offense, and they just didn't plan for it very well. It just didn't happen.
Well, Peppers is a guy that you just, like, in even in high school, you just want the ball in his hands.
Right.
So you just run any sort of play just to quickly get the ball in his hand and see what he does.
Right, but they kept doing that quarterback stuff, and that eventually
with
it was
Peppers.
Like, yeah, and it was like, yeah, this isn't going to work out. So I think Ambry is a guy who maybe is benefiting from Michigan learning that lesson and being like, here's our huge super athlete. We're just going to give him the ball.
Do you put Thomas like on that level?
No.
Okay.
But yeah, he's obviously a guy who kind of demands attention in practice from the coaches. So he's not on the Peppers level because he's not that fast and also like 20 pounds heavier.
Yes, I think the heavier thing is the key because a lot of the stuff we've seen him do have been a lot of straight line speeds, like a jet sweep or a fake jet sweep. And then this was essentially like a, hey, go see if you can get behind this corner.
Yeah.
And he did.
He did. He got behind that guy a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. A couple of backup running backs got more time than they had previously. Christian Turner got his first run out. Looked pretty good. He was slippery. He was able to break some tackles in kind of a Higdon way. He's a lot smaller, but
yeah,
he was tough to bring down on first contact.
Yeah, he's a little thicker when he's running through. And like you said, yeah, like kind of a... I think I saw somebody tweet, I can't remember who it was, but said this looks like freshman year Higdon.
Yeah, it kind of did. Except we didn't get that much evidence from freshman year Higdon.
We had the 2 years.
The four carries where he got buried in the backfield.
Burned his red shirt.
Yeah. Well, burning that red shirt in retrospect was...
Yeah, I mean, are they getting a 2019 season from Caron Higdon? No. Probably not.
And then Omori Samuels had 6 carries for 23 yards. Looked good. Broke a couple tackles and then fumbled.
Yeah, the fumble was late. And then you pretty much saw Christian Turner after that.
Right.
You could see him after they recovered it. He goes off, and Turner's on the field before Samuels is even up. So I think that it was kind of like, well, we know where this is going. But, yeah, I kind of – so when they went – at halftime, obviously, the game is all but over. And it was like this
people were telling me to post the otter.
Oh, yeah?
And I was like, I'm going to wait a little bit.
Yeah, I mean – you never want to count your chickens, I guess.
Apparently, the biggest comeback in NCAA history is 38 points, though. So I could have. But it would have been like, I don't know.
So I was just like, you know, there's no reason to see a lot of people in this half. Like, Higdon's one of them because you don't want a dumb injury. I mean, that isn't... Like, we've had injuries in silly time in the past where you're just like, I know that people need time and they're here to play football, but at the same time there are bigger games. And so I was like, this is a great half for Omari Samuels. And you know, he got a few carries, not kind of maybe the workload that I was kind of hoping.
Yeah.
But,
I did forget one thing.
Okay.
About the starters is that True Wilson's big run on 3rd and 8, he really effectively threatened one gap, and then he had this kind of jump cut outside, and that got him a block from his offensive line that made a linebacker too confused. And that's the kind of thing I was talking about all last year when it felt like Michigan running backs were just running in a straight line. So the gap you threaten shouldn't be the gap that you actually hit some of the time.
So you're setting up a second-level defender.
Right. So you see, like, defensive tackles, they'll you know, stand a guy up, and then they'll try to rip to the gap.
Sure.
And so if you can get that guy to rip to a gap that you're not actually going to be in, then you've won that block for your offensive line.
Right.
And I thought that was a really great example of Drew Wilson being able to pull that off. And that's, you know, something where he's not the fastest guy, he's not the quickest guy, but so far he seems like a really instinctive running back who just kind of understands that.
Yeah, he seems like as smart of a running back as Michigan's had in a while, where, yeah, like you said, setting things up like that.
You checked out some of the pass protection, right?
So I went back and I watched the majority of the first half and just kind of trying to see if there's anything that jumped off. And one of them was, because at halftime I was kind of like, I think the pass protection was good. And I was like, I should go back and, well, it's, you know.
I feel like I've been taking crazy pills.
I don't want to just, you know, hot take all over the place. So it's, yeah, like, I should go check this out. And so I went back and looked at it, and they had, there's one major pressure on Patterson that we talked about in the prep, where it was like a triple A gap blitz, you,
yeah,
said?
Yeah, so they send both linebackers, and then they also send a safety up the gut.
Which is well, go ahead.
And the safety got through.
Yeah.
But he's the last guy through, right? So, like, you've already kind of picked off the guys who successfully pick up the twist blitz.
Yeah.
And then Patterson's able to get the ball off anyway.
And when you bring seven guys or whatever it is, six guys, like, there's going to be space, and he sees Gentry, and they get a first down.
Yeah.
So that's not a big deal. But the rest of it was, I didn't see any one-on-one misses by, like, a guy who's trying to stand a guy up in pass protection, like, across the board.
Yeah.
There might have been a couple times where if there's nobody open, somebody eventually gets free, but nothing that was like a clear gaffe where you're just like, uh-oh, we can't do that.
Right. You know, one thing I did notice is that Michigan was chipping a lot. Mm. So before Gentry would get in a route, or before, sure, the back would get in a route, they would make sure to go hit a defensive lineman. And I think that was mostly on Bushel Beatty's side, actually. So I don't know. I mean, maybe Runyon just had the worst game of his life against Notre Dame, and he's actually a better tackle than that.
I mean,
they don't seem to be helping him very much.
I don't know that, like, we would talk about, like, the competition and level and stuff, yeah, and there are definitely teams in the Big Ten that have better defensive lines that Michigan's going to have to face. But, like, this is, you know,
it's got to be a step up.
Right, and that's what you're saying in your preview, is just kind of like, these are just, we're slowly ramping up to the next levels, and Michigan's kind of like passing it. And now they have a road game against a team with a decent front seven next week.
We get the Gaz next week.
Right. So, and that's probably like the right time, right? Like, this is when you want, well, I'm saying, like,
other than never, sure.
I'm saying that, like, now you want to face a team that is going to have a player that could wreak some havoc, but isn't on the most destructive team, where if you make a mistake, it's over.
Right. So the guys can get his, and you can still win the game.
Right. And this is a good prep for the month of October.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? We got anything else on that?
I wrote down that Vastardis is the third center.
Yes.
I didn't know that they had a third center, and I was happy to see that
they do.
And I don't know. He didn't fumble snaps, so hooray.
So no is the answer. We have nothing more to talk about. All right. We're going to take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. It's over.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main, or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up, and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across Southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest and HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop with different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlet, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Thing I want to get off my chest is that the targeting call on Kalik Hudson was complete and total garbage.
And you were in favor of it or accepting of it last time?
The one last week was a clear targeting call.
Okay.
Where he hits the guy with the top of his helmet.
Right.
And you can see the force that he impacts. That guy's head whips back because it impacts the top of Kalik Hudson's helmet. Gotta call that. This one, you know, he's coming on straight to a quarterback. He tackles him. He puts his face mask in the guy's chest, and there's no whip back from the head.
Right.
Nothing, like, if there was head-to-head contact there, it was incidental, and the vast majority of the force went into his chest. You know, football is dangerous. We want to get dangerous stuff out of the game, and so far as possible, that is going way too far. There is no planet on which that should be a legit targeting call.
Do you think that was a 56-10 targeting call?
You can't do that, because there's a game next week, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
I'm just saying, like, if it's a 50-50 and you're going to
That was not a
50-50.
That is not targeting on any planet in the universe. If the vast majority of the force does not go to the helmet and you're hitting face up, which Hudson did, it can't be targeting. That hit cannot be targeting unless you want to make this flag football. I know that sounds like a hot take.
We're getting in those ranges of things. And
getting into like the Colin Cowherd range. Just tell me if I get to like the Skip Bayless range so I can kill myself.
You're in the Richard Sherman range.
That's good. I like being in the Richard Sherman range. That's a good range. But yeah, that call was hot garbage, and nobody get on Kalik Hudson for that, because he's tackling the quarterback.
Yeah.
And he's tackling the quarterback with his face in the quarterback's chest. That's what you want.
Yep.
Anyway.
So, I mean, maybe this will transition into what did you see of Jordan Glasgow in the first half? Was he an acceptable replacement?
I mean, he gets a sack, and that sack is a completely unblocked rush.
And that was schemed, I think, yeah.
It was schemed. He did do a good job of not pulling the Brandon Harrison. Poor Brandon Harrison. It's just like he's such a good example for... I'm sorry, Brandon. I mean, we keep bringing him up as like that's the only thing he did in his Michigan career. Not true, but he did do it a lot where he got a free run and overran the quarterback. And Glasgow didn't do that. He did secure the sack. So,
yep.
I think that was good. I thought, I didn't feel Kalik Hudson's absence very much in the first half. But just given how that game was going, like, how could I?
Yeah, right? when you're up by multiple scores and you're getting a lot of punts, it's tough to miss anyone.
I did think that, so there's the interception on the first drive.
Right.
That was a wide-open touchdown.
Okay.
If it's not deflected by Lawrence Marshall.
One of my really good friends actually texted me the exact same thing after that.
Well, it was.
Okay.
And am I not your really good friend?
No, you're a good friend. Oh, I'm saying
just not a really good friend. That's fine.
No. It's
I just want to know where.
Well, we have to define the line between friend and boss, and it gets complicated. Oh. And do you want to have another psychology session here?
Maybe not.
Okay.
Live on the podcast.
So should we? should we maybe? I'm saying that.
Should we talk about Jordan Glasgow? Though? Did I make it awkward?
Well, we're just kind of talking about Lawrence Marshall. I think is what you transitioned to.
Well, no, I wasn't done talking about Glasgow.
Even though that the interception came from Marshall's collection.
Did I get downgraded from just? To just friend now.
Yeah, crossed okay. Your line through the name.
Anyway, so I thought Glasgow probably was the reason that was so wide open.
Okay.
So I'll have to go check it, but just from my initial read on the play, I was like, that's probably him. So that's not great, but obviously he had some plays, and he's comfortable in the defense. Like, he's not going to be the kind of guy who I think beats an offensive tackle like Hudson is capable of doing on a blitz. He'll probably be a little bit worse in coverage just because he's less athletic, but I don't think the drop-off is huge.
No.
Especially in the world where Kalik Hudson gets a garbage targeting call.
And maybe his lack of athleticism puts him in a position where he can't go screaming at a guy and he has to play the contain sack and does it well.
Yeah, well, Hudson's good at that, too.
Okay. Well, we didn't. All right.
So
trying to find positives for Jordan Glasgow.
I don't think that not having Hudson is going to be a devastating blow to the defense. I think that they have a solid backup for him who's not as good. That's why he's the backup. But he's not a guy who, if we didn't have Hudson for the entire season and Hudson didn't exist, Glasgow would be fine.
Right. Yeah, and fifth-year senior has been around a long time.
I think he's a junior. He got one more year.
Glasgow?
I think so.
I don't think so.
Oh.
We can look it.
Look it up.
All right.
All right. We have concluded he is a Richard Jr. So
that appears to be the case.
There you go. As for the rest of the defense stuff, this felt like, the 2015 team or parts of the 2016 season where it just seems impossible to move the ball on them in any consistent fashion.
Or score.
Yeah. I mean, there was three back-to-back shutouts, and I was like, that's going to happen. We're going to get a shutout. And it didn't, but...
Well, we'll talk about some of that later. But
will we? Uh-oh. You and your sad field goal crusade. Yes, fine. You and your sad field goals. But, so, in this game, it felt like Michigan's stars really were performing at the All-American level we were hoping. You have Bush running all over the field, sticking people. He gets those ooh hits from the crowd. Like, there's a screen that they're trying on him. And, why are you trying to put a lineman on Devin Bush in space? Like, why do you think that's going to go well?
Yeah, he recognized that right away and just blew right through everybody.
And when he makes contact, it's over.
Yep.
So, and then we had Rashawn Gary, who read the message boards this week. My favorite play from him was not the playing both ends of the speed option, but there's one particular rush he got where, I've been talking about how it'd be nice if he went speed to power more often, and he did that. So the Nebraska left tackle was blocking Rashawn Gary, and then the next moment he was on his ass. And this went poorly for Adrian Martinez because, man, that poor kid. That was like some Devin Gardner
Well, he already can't move, right? And he's hurt. Yeah. And now you're putting in a position where you're just having all Americans firing at him and no one is really kind of touching people in front of him. And, like, well, about a few drives into the game, I was just kind of like, I mean, at what point are you just like, all right, we can't do this anymore?
Well, and they pulled him for their backup walk-on.
But not to like halftime, I think.
Yeah, and then immediately he gets hurt.
First play. Like, come on.
And then, like, I'm looking down at the sideline, and they do have like a couple of other quarterbacks who are in like headsets, and they're like
getting really nervous.
Like, I know I'm in pads here, people, but I did not sign up for this.
I have no idea where my helmet is.
Sorry, I left it on the bus. In Nebraska.
In Nebraska, yeah. One of them probably actually did after reviewing the game tape from the past few weeks. It's just like, you know what's going to stay here?
Pass.
Yep.
And then the rest of it was just kind of guys popping up from time to time to make really nice plays. But Nebraska wasn't really on the field long enough to have super takes about a lot of people.
No, I mean, they rotated the D-line more, and so you got to see Dwumfor make a few plays. And
there was also a pretty clear distinction between the top unit and the backup unit.
Okay.
So there was one third convert, third, third, Jesus. There was one third and short conversion late in the game that had, like, Dwumfor and maybe Marshall or... It was definitely a backup set, and they just kind of pushed the pile for about 5 yards, and I was like, oh, that's weird.
We haven't seen this in a couple
of
weeks.
And then I remembered that, you know, the second team guys were in. And when Monet and Kemp were in, it felt exactly like the SMU game where running up the middle was a pointless exercise because you just can't block those guys one-on-one.
And I think the thing that kind of jumps out to me regarding that is that, like, Brian Monet is becoming a really big piece. I mean, we talked about him.
Well, he has to play,
obviously,
like,
he's a big piece.
A ton of snaps, right? Because, like, he's always been the guy who doesn't have, like, a lot of endurance.
Right.
People want him to lose weight. And like, he's been a rock. He hasn't been an impact player.
But he's been guy that is continuously in the game.
Yeah, but he's been a guy who is very reliable.
Yeah, and that's something that we weren't sure about, like you said. And we're third of the way through the season, and I have no qualms.
Not a qualm. Nary a qualm.
I'd like him to get together with Huma again and do the ukulele thing. But
that would be awesome. Maybe he can like have a new band with Ben Mason.
I wonder what kind of music they would listen to. Anyway.
Metal. Ukulele metal?
Hawaiian metal.
Hawaiian ukulele metal, yeah. That probably exists.
Everything probably does now.
That's true. One guy who did kind of stand out as having a good all-around game was Josh Metellus. So he did have the pick.
Yes.
Which is just kind of like a found money kind of event.
Which we need to shout out Lawrence Marshall for.
We already did.
Not for that play.
All right, well, we're officially drawing up the shout-out plaque.
To Lawrence Marshall.
Yes, I'm writing down official shout out.
Ooh,
to Lawrence Marshall.
All in caps. Are you screaming that?
I can't write in lowercase unless I'm writing my email address. It's very strange.
I find out new things about you every week, Brian.
I really wish that the tone on that was a little bit nicer.
I'm not being mean.
I have written.
We've established that you are a good friend of mine.
Yes. Well.
No,
we might have crossed out the good.
We crossed out the really.
All right, so I have signed the official Lawrence Marshall shout out.
I can.
Now you are going to sign the official Lawrence Marshall shout out. Do you feel we have successfully shouted out Lawrence Marshall?
He had that fumble recovery against Florida, and I was so happy for him last year.
Yeah.
And then he had a nice deflection on the first drive of what you said was probably going to be a touchdown.
True.
And started the game off on the right foot for Michigan.
And he was super pumped up about that too.
Yes. Well, he's a fifth-year senior trying to get on the field, and now he's made a couple of impact plays, and at least if he doesn't have a great finish to his career, he's made plays and contributed to a solid team. There you go, Lawrence.
Can we move on.
Okay. We can move back to a Josh Martellus, I think.
Yeah.
Did you? And that lasted for at least a quarter.
Well, I was there, so I didn't get the Spencer Tillman, Tim Brando experience.
Oh, it was Martellus for longer than it needed to be. I feel like
is
I get to a
point. Is that worse or better than Donovan People Jones?
I get to the point wonder where you're just like, do people read the rosters? Do you read and do you know phonetics? I mean, like,
yeah, I don't know how you get Martellus out of his name,
especially when you and it just look at it and it says, oh, okay, I think I can sound that out.
Is it, there was like an NFL defensive lineman called Martellus Wiley.
Marcellus? Yeah.
It wasn't Marcellus was the guy from Pulp Fiction.
Okay. I've never seen that, but that's...
That I already knew.
All right. Yeah. That was... Is that a surprise? Oh, no. Dave hasn't seen a Quentin Tarantino movie?
Woo. I think you might like some Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yeah. I smell a coconut ranch coming out.
No. There's a couple that I think you could get through without vomiting.
All right. Getting a bit far from
Martellus. Taylor. I was going to bring up Adrian Martinez's arm punt.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, how do you feel about the defensive backery on that play?
It's kind of like Mitch Leidner's, what, back shoulder?
A back shoulder corner
route.
Yeah. Oh, God. That is a good shout out because you want to do another one? No.
Okay. We have to write it down.
So that's actually a really good comparison. I kind of feel like sometimes things just get thrown downfield, and because of your momentum and the other person's momentum, that they get to the ball first, and there's no real blame.
So you remember the Ambry Thomas PI at the end of the game where he just hits the wide receiver and the ball's poorly underthrown in the end zone?
Yes.
Like, that's kind of like that, where he's in the right position, except the ball is now thrown in the worst possible spot for him. The receiver's recognized it, trying to get back to it, and he's playing such good coverage that when the receiver turns and runs into him, that creates the pass interference. Well, this is the same thing,
right,
where it's just he threw to space that he didn't know was there, and then the guy won the jump ball because the corner's like, well, there's no way the ball's going there. Oh, it is. How? Yeah. So, whatever.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I also feel like those pass interference calls where the only reason that it's pass interference is because the ball was horribly thrown.
Right.
Those feel deeply unfair to me.
Yeah, I just... What do you do? I mean...
Change
just
the rule?
Don't call... Well, yeah. I guess you could change the rule.
Entitle someone to their momentum?
That seems like a lot too much logic for the groups of people that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The secondary play in that sense, no issue.
I mean, how many yards per attempt did Adrian Martinez get?
1.5.
Really?
He was 7 of 15 for 22 yards.
What?
Adrian Martinez. Bunch was different. He was 6 of 9 for 71.
I mean, he had a couple of like deep shots that were actually... So he had that arm punt, and then he had like negative passing yards the rest of the day?
I guess.
Because that was at least 22 yards, right?
Yeah, it was probably around there. It would give or take.
So Michigan suffered that and then gave up negative.
But what else do you remember that even went right for Nebraska on offense in that half? I mean, he had that scramble in the first half that picked up a first down. I mean, it was in the third quarter when they had three first downs.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I remember like on the lat that like Nebraska gets it back and I'm like, oh, they're going to get over 100 yards of offense.
I like it how, like, what was it? A couple weeks ago, last week, you were like, oh, they're going to get 300. And this weekend, 100 is unnecessary.
Well, it's just, you know.
In context.
Like, yeah, like keeping them under the big round number.
Sure. Well, for a while, they had, what, negative rushing yards?
Yeah, that would have been nice, too. I like inflicting the negative rushing yards. I don't like suffering, like, negative yards.
Well, we've had both.
Yes, thank you. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk special teams, and apparently sad field goals.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com.
want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced, co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Dave, how does your friend Larissa feel about Beats?
I don't think she really likes Beats.
I don't like Beats. Who likes Beats?
People who are into music, probably.
That's just a middle finger to me. I don't get to be into music anymore.
Did I corncob you? That's kind of ironic considering who we played yesterday.
Yeah.
Anyway, for those of you who like Beats with two E's, apparently Lantana Hummus has some really good beet flavor.
Not apparently. Your friend Larissa said this.
She does, and she's kind of a foodie.
Oh, she's a foodie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that kind of, I know her.
Yeah, you could see that.
I can't.
No, it's not a negative thing at all.
Well,
just that certain people have qualities, and
yes.
And so
some of them are.
She says that she doesn't like beets, but
this is the one.
This is the one beet-related item that is actually very good. So if you're into beets,
if
you're not into beets,
but you want to get adjacent to the beet experience,
yes, Lantana Hummus might be the hummus for you.
Lantana Hummus is available at Butcher's, Kroger, Meijer, and your local grocer. Look for the striped lids. All right, get it. Just get it. Get it off your chest.
I just like you. You talk about people who grew up playing Madden. Like, if I'm getting beaten Madden in a bad game or something, I'm not kicking a field goal just so I can, like...
Down 46-0.
Yeah. I just... Especially if you're a Power 5 team. Like, I get he's rebuilding it, and he's trying to change the culture, and you're coming to Michigan, they have a good defense, and you don't want to leave with a zero and stuff. But it's also, like, it's the third quarter. Like, keep playing. You changed a... It was a 46-point game. You made a 43-point... I don't know.
Remember the big deal that everybody made about how Michigan hadn't been shut out in, like, 20 years?
Then don't... But, yeah, it's just that, like, there's a thing about getting shut out where it seems cheap to get to the 30 and kick a 50-yard field goal. Like, haha, we got on the board. Like, I guess if you get down inside like the 5 or the 10 and you've almost scored a touchdown, now it's 4th and goal from the 13 and you're like, all right, it's a little bit different, but I don't know.
This really gets under your skin.
It's just kind of whatever.
Like, you every week you're like, there was a sad field goal. Yeah.
Well, it was brought up a few times. I mean, James Franklin did it and there was a couple other situations.
The James Franklin one was they still had like a shot, right?
It was 28-0 and they hadn't done anything all game.
Right. So 28-0, you can still win this football game. At 46-0.
I guess.
Nobody has ever come back from a deficit that
long. Do you remember the 2016 Penn State game?
Yes.
All right. How worried were you when he was kicking that field goal that if they scored a touchdown?
I know, but what I'm saying is, like, to me, it's different if there's any feasible way that you could win the game. Like, if the game's just over and you're just getting your field goal guy out there because he's a freshman and he's 2-4 on the year and it's like, oh, maybe he'll be 3-5. Whatever. That's fine. If there's any chance to win the game, then I have a problem with it. So the Sonny Dykes approach when he's down 18 with 8 minutes left.
And then he punts.
That grinds my gears.
Yeah.
But like, if you're down 46 or 49 and nothing, I don't care. Do whatever you want. Just
yes, you're right. And I'm not going to infringe upon Scott Frost, his right to make that decision. I'm just going to call it a sad field goal.
It is a sad field goal.
That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, hopefully we get this segment every week.
Well, if we win 56-4 every week, I will gladly take that.
Special teams was almost entirely a positive event, because everything was, but we have the Donovan Peoples-Jones punt return.
So are you back on the DPJ can return punts,
you know,
train?
I watched it on replay, and it's not as impressive as it was live. If Ace still listens to this podcast, his head just exploded.
One of my favorite outtakes that we had from last year was when it was during the Donovan Peoples-Jones kind of fumbles, and we're like, well, who should, you know, what are we going to do about this? And you're kind of getting frustrated, and you're like, I just want a guy to catch the punts, and I know a guy, you know, why don't they just put James Hudson back there? And Ace just kind of looked at you and was like, well, that would certainly be interesting. And you're like, what? Oh, yeah, I mean Kalik. And so I kind of was like, hey, you know what would be awesome if James Hudson returned the punt? And this is a chance where, yeah.
They could have.
Well, he's not playing tackle. Do something else.
I mean, that's kind of a middle finger. It's just putting a offensive tackle back there to catch a punt.
I think that we can all be agreed that DPJ can return punts. And he caught some. Like, he wasn't giving away yards on other ones.
I thought he looked like a comfortable, natural punt returner.
Right.
I was a little surprised that Bell came out as the number two. I thought that would be like Oliver Martin. But
Oliver Martin's probably out there to catch the ball. And
he's...
I mean, I haven't
that
seen
is,
him. What?
He's not just a gym rat. He's got like a killer spark score. He's an athlete.
Okay. I haven't seen him return a punt.
Stereotypical white wide receiver stereotyping.
You're bringing that up.
Well, yeah. So the rest of it is Will Hart continuing his Heisman campaign with three punts for 178 yards along a 64 and three return yards.
Yeah, 2 for 3, I think, is what Nebraska had.
So, goddamn. That, like, I don't know if anyone has ever exceeded expectations like Will Hart has.
Well, especially after what happened last year.
Right, like, established, like, I don't know about this kind of level performer, and then now he's a Heisman contender.
I mean, that's...
He had a fourth bomb that got called back because Michigan had a false start. And that was, like, another, like, 55-yard punt. What did this guy do in the offseason?
Punt, apparently. Made sure that he was finding his, like, contact point on the ball that was not sending it off to the side.
I wonder if he did an occult ritual.
We can send someone to look into that.
To be perfectly fair, as long as the occult ritual is merely draining the life force of various small animals and doesn't, like, boomerang into a future punting curse, I'm fine with it. Any, like, delayed gratification where, like, you're good now and then you just have 15 years of, like, 20-yard punts, we can't have that.
Right.
But, so it's got to be the right kind of cult ritual.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. I think...
Quentin Ordine hit a 50-yarder.
That was good from, what would you say?
65. It wasn't like the most bomb I've ever seen Quentin Ordine kick. But it was definitely good from some distance. That was
so,
a large distance.
He obviously missed the extra point.
Yeah.
I've had multiple people ask me, when do we just kick extra points from about like 40?
Well, he did hit a 42-yarder in this game as well. And then the only bad thing that happened on special teams was the final play of the first half. where Michigan turned down the opportunity to kick a 60-yard field goal.
And I think we just talked about this on the podcast last week, where we're like, there's some situations where if you're up a lot and you're like, or hey, just, you have a chance to let this guy kick from 75. Let's see what happens.
Right. This was a perfect. Is that going to be a Michigan record, a 60-yard field goal? I bet it is. Like, you don't get that many opportunities to, like, run the field goal kicker out there for a 60-yarder. Should have taken that one. Also, we would have forced Ace to get the Wild Thing haircut.
So, what were the... What, was it in the same game?
2 50-yarders in the same game.
Okay, and so we already had the one.
We had the one.
And so this would have...
This would have been two.
Flipped that up over the top.
Yeah.
I would have...
Ace doesn't... Like, Ace is like, this isn't a bet. I don't have to do this. And then on Twitter, he's like, oh, God, please no. Please no. Like, these are contradictory opinions.
So he's kind of like sort of signing up for it.
I guess. I feel like he would feel like his honor would be impinged if he didn't do it. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a neat trick, though.
Either way, I mean, seeing a Michigan field goal kicker line up around midfield or on their own side of the field just to have a go.
Yeah.
I mean, in history, Nordine is the guy that you'd want to do that to. Can you think of another guy that Michigan's had that you'd be like, I'd give him a shot?
No.
Right. And so, you know, you got two more years of him, presumably, and like you'd like to at least give this a shot, because
you gotta take a shot,
because there are some games where if it's like a one score game or something going into halftime, you're not gonna do that.
No,
but in this case, what's the worst thing
that
happens?
No, even in this one, like if he misses it, you know, they get the ball back at the same place.
Well, if he misses it, there's probably a good chance that it's returned, right?
No, he's missing it. He's not missing it short. He's missing it wide. If he's missing, you know, this is true. That's not actually a concern for Quinn Nordine.
That's true. I guess I'm just used to kickers thinking that way. And right. With this guy, there's no reason to.
Exactly. The only other thing I have is that there was a lot of murmuring in the crowd when Nebraska fair caught a kickoff on the 1 yard line.
I just think people don't understand the rule.
They don't.
Also, sometimes it seems like coaches and teams don't, because that hasn't happened as much as I guess I would have thought it would.
Well, Nebraska kind of got cocky once, and they're like, I'm going to take this back, and they got out to the 16.
Well, that was after it was like their offense
and
wasn't going to do anything.
Joe Hewlett blew a guy up. He was right in front of my seats, and the guy's coming in, and Hewlett's going to get this block, and then that guy just goes flying. And Hewlett's like 5'9", maybe.
Yeah, he's a walk-on running back, fullback.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
I was impressed. But
Carl Grambetine also said that.
He said the rule, yeah.
Because he felt then, probably like he knew the rule and everyone else didn't. He's like, well,
better get this out there.
Yeah.
And then he says the rule, and then people are still murmuring the next time there's a fair catch on a kickoff. I'm like, come on, people. Get with the program. I mean, that's like the IMG people were good this week. There was one Nebraska lady who kept standing up and being like, go Huskers, but she sat down before the play, so I appreciated that.
That's kind of like the SEC when they have all their pom-poms and everyone's waving their pom-poms, and then the play starts and everybody pulls their pom-poms down.
See, that I wouldn't mind, like the Michigan pom-poms, if people knew how to act with them.
Right.
But like they have those at every game, and they're called shakers. They're not pom-poms.
Okay, I'm sorry.
They're shakers because they're very afraid of having their masculinity impinged upon in the South, which is a very normal place. So, but it's part of their culture, and so they know to get the freaking thing down before the play starts.
Yeah.
And that is not the case at Michigan, because there's always some...
Because we're not used to it, so you get this, and you're kind of like, oh, I'm just going to use this, and then...
Yeah. And it's always like the people who don't really know what they're doing. Don't go to games very much.
It's
don't have the
probably a good barometer of how much you know.
I did get told to sit down during a commercial break.
During a commercial break?
Yes.
So not during play?
No. I mean, I'm...
Maybe she wanted to... He or she wanted to
as
see...
As far as standing goes, I'm very much a... I just go with the flow.
Okay.
If the section stands, I stand. If the section doesn't stand, I don't stand.
Are you a reactionary stander? Like, if you see Higdon breaking into the third level and there's space, are you like...
There is a degree of reactionary standing I do, yes.
Okay.
So it's possible that she was not prepared for the reactionary standing and she was annoyed and she was just taking this opportunity to tell me to sit down during a commercial break. Which I did during that commercial break. And then I stood up for the rest of them because, you know, it's not good to just sit in one place for 3 hours.
Oh.
You got to stand up, move around.
There was a seventh inning stretch for a reason.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
So, but aside from that, the Brian Cook fan experience at the game.
The factor was mercifully low.
It was fine.
Yeah. The people in front of me were like super, super old. So that's always a good thing.
And even though it seemed like the fourth quarter kind of dragged a little bit with a few different things, it was the weather was nice. It was a good time to be at a game.
On the other hand, there were four commercial breaks in the first 8 minutes.
Okay.
There was a commercial break, one play, commercial break, three play, commercial break sequence. I was just like, what on? I mean, it's too much. It's too much. Like, I don't want to, like, beat it to death every week, but, yeah, man. You need to, like, change it, because it's ridiculous that you can have a one-play touchdown drive, and then it's 2 minutes of commercials. Like, I just saw 11 seconds of football, people. Come on.
We also saw a touchdown.
Who cares about touchdowns? We just want. All right, so we are going to take one more break, come back, talk to Jamie.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
As I took step number four into the close of your tenement, you cast your darkened eyes so low. Said we're cold as the steps of man. But I just don't know. Oh, what you meant. What you meant. So I'll hear me once a thrill. We are so cruel.
Welcome in, Jamie Mack at JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
Well, I'm doing good, guys. How are you doing?
Not. Jamie is unavailable today, so we're going to be tackling our Big Ten section by ourselves, but Jamie will be back next week. OSU 49, Tulane 6. Congratulations, OSU. Purdue 30, Boston College 13. This one came out of nowhere because Boston College had been ripping it up. Scott Leffler had them averaging like 550 yards offense a game, and they come in to West Lafayette. Or I don't even, was this in West Lafayette?
It was in West Lafayette.
And they rack up 229 yards. David Blau throws for 10 yards an attempt, and his name isn't DJ Moore. Rondell?
Rondell Moore.
Rondell Moore.
True freshman. Rondale. I'm sorry. Rondale.
Two touchdowns, rips off a really spectacular one that announces him as one of the Big Ten's burgeoning stars. And Purdue
gets off the schneid with a 30-13 win.
After about three coin flip losses, they finally looked a little bit better and didn't put themselves in a position.
They looked a lot better. That's their first win over a ranked team in like 20 tries.
Well, I guess I'm getting highlights on my laptop. All right. Yes, I noted, I believe, in the stat sheet that Blau did not throw an interception.
Which is a definite Blau thing to do.
Or a Purdue quarterback thing to do. So yeah. They did not have an interception.
They look a lot better when they're not throwing interceptions. I don't know how this... I mean, honestly, this was during the noon window, so none of us saw it. But they held A.J. Dillon to 59 yards.
And he had 20 carries.
How does Purdue do that? I don't know.
Bring a bunch of safeties down and dare their quarterback to go over the top. I
do feel there's a little bit of a fluky thing in here because in just 27 attempts, A.J. Brown from... Not A.J. Brown. I don't know.
Anthony Brown.
Yeah. I mean, in just 27 attempts, Anthony Brown, the BC quarterback, throws four interceptions. Probably not going to happen for Purdue very often.
His YPA was also...
Really terrible.
3.6.
So, a completely unexpected game from Purdue. I think they're obviously going to be a little bit better than they showed. Doesn't bode well for George Karlaftis.
No, but the Purdue defense, hey.
That doesn't bode well for George Karlaftis either.
Okay.
It does bode well for the Brom project.
The Brom squad?
Is that what they call it?
I think that's what it is.
That's good. Buffalo 42.
Rutgers, you can't get this out.
13. I'm not even going to Big Ten this because this team is not in the Big Ten.
Buffalo's 4-0, man.
Buffalo is good. They beat the brakes off somebody that seems halfway decent.
Well, they won at Temple.
Right, and Temple beat Maryland.
That's true.
Handily. So Rutgers came into this game a 6-point dog, and whoo boy, that was not enough. They pulled their freshman quarterback, and the Giovanni Rusciagno era resumes, and it goes about how you would expect.
Yeah.
They can't run the ball in any way whatsoever. They don't get 300 yards of offense against Buffalo. Buffalo puts it to them. This score happened despite the fact that Rutgers did not turn the ball over, and Buffalo threw two picks, and they still got beat 42-13.
Yeah, the thing to me is that I've done a little bit of research into Buffalo because I'm from that area, and so I've had family members have gone there.
They're from everywhere.
That's probably true. But so they have an NFL caliber wide receiver. Anthony Johnson is being kind of looked at by NFL scouts, and so you think, all right, what's going to happen if Buffalo beats you? Well, their NFL wide receiver goes Corey Davis and just tears it up. Well, he has two catches, and one of them goes for a touchdown, but Buffalo's also able to run the ball pretty well. With multiple different backs. So the way that you would think Buffalo would beat a team like Rutgers, a bottom-end Power 5 team, is not the way that they did, which
by
should
just
set...
beating the brakes off of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, you'd think they'd win it through the air, and that was not the case, and Rutgers lost to Buffalo's Plan B. Can we say that?
By 31 points. By 5 scores. So, congratulations, Rutgers. I don't know if this is the most surprising result of the week, but Maryland bounces back from a multiple score loss against Temple and destroys Minnesota again, 42-13. And they don't have to throw the ball hardly at all to do this. They get 14 attempts from Kasim Hill, and they just have a very Ty Johnson day from Ty Johnson, which is 11 carries for 123 yards. And Minnesota has nothing. I mean, they've had a lot of injury issues.
Yeah, I don't even recognize any of their players that are in the stats.
Well, I mean, Shannon Brooks is injured.
Right.
Rodney Smith is injured.
Right.
So they're just putting out their third string at best running back. They can't crack 300 yards against the Maryland defense that got kind of clonked last week. So.
And their quarterback completed less than 50% of his passes.
Yeah. He's a freshman walk-on.
Sure. But that's not going to help you any.
I don't know how you can't recruit a quarterback at Maryland Minnesota, when your depth chart is that wide open.
You would think that you would say, hey, you get to start by default.
Or just find some of those 6'5 guys who want to play quarterback, but might not be able to play quarterback. Get four of them in, convert two of them to wide receiver, and see what you got with the other two. I don't know. This is just depressing.
Yeah, I don't have high hopes for Minnesota this year.
Nobody's rowing the boat.
Boat's just kind of floating.
The boat is unrowed.
Float the boat.
All right, on to the three. I'm sorry. On to the three semi-competitive games of the week. One of the men's 63-24.
yeah.
This is... But Illinois did have a third quarter lead against Penn State. And first half, Penn State is a 7-5 team, a 4-8 team. And second half, Penn State is Alabama.
Apparently.
Except scarier. So after Illinois takes a 24-21 lead, Penn State rips off 7 touchdowns.
That's a lot of touchdowns.
That was 6 touchdowns. Sorry. I don't want to overstate things. But Illinois collapses in extremely Illinois fashion. I mentioned the people who are Illinois fans who I follow. And one of them was just like, I've seen the ending of this movie. And he was right. This was like after Penn State had scored to go up 28-24.
Right. And Illinois. So I was driving back from FBO and I caught that on my phone. And it was a 4-point game and Illinois had the ball and kind of moving towards midfield, and I was like, wow, maybe, and then they punted, and then, I mean, Miles Sanders has, what, averages 10 yards a carry, Ricky Slade averages almost 10 yards a carry, I mean, they pretty much weren't stopping Penn State, it seems like.
I mean, they had a moment here or there in the first half,
yeah,
but not really. I think they might have found a quarterback in MJ Rivers, who's a freshman. 5.3 yards an attempt in this game. Looked a little bit, shaky from time to time. Had some accuracy issues. But he looked like a guy you might be able to build with going forward.
So should we talk at all about that this game was on a Friday night?
It's just...
I also saw on Twitter somebody's like, hey, big profile, high profile game for Illinois that they can bring all of their recruits to, except they can't because they're already all playing.
Well, and this was one of the Friday night games that the Big Ten agreed to when they signed the new Fox contract.
Right.
And Michigan, of course, was like, get bent.
Pass.
I'm surprised that Penn State was willing to play on a Friday night. Like, these should be like the Illinois Indianas of the schedule.
Well, it's probably they'll play on a Friday night on a road game against a team that they think they're going to beat the week before they play Ohio State, so they have an extra day or two.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
When you look at it in a greater context, kind of made a little more sense.
Yeah, I mean they're such a weird team because they have to go to overtime to beat Appalachian State. They're in a dogfight with Pitt at halftime in a really weird game.
It was just a rain mess, though. I'm not gonna.
I know, but like
extrapolate a lot from that.
And then they just beat the brakes off people in the second half. I'm using that phrase way too much. I'm gonna stop saying that.
Okay.
They're gonna beat hams off.
Go ham.
But I feel like Penn State has to be a little bit concerned that Illinois is managing to put up 411 yards on them.
Didn't you tweet out during this game that you're mildly concerned because Illinois looks somewhat like a football team?
They did look like a football team.
Well, that's positive for them. We play them next year.
Like, I'm afraid that if I go to Wikipedia, I'm going to find out that I've been in an alternate universe where Illinois has been like a functional football team for the last 5 years. Like they go 5-7 most years and they get a bowl game every other year or so. And if that's the case, then what else about the universe has changed that I haven't realized? Nothing good. Like all the really obvious stuff that could be good hasn't happened.
Okay.
But now that Illinois looks like a football team, what else could possibly have changed? Are you following me?
Yeah, kind of. Okay. It's pretty open-ended, and I'm not sure where you're exactly trying to go. But
All right.
I think we've talked about Illinois football for long enough.
That's true. Michigan State 35, Indiana 21. And this is when the DeBoard hits.
Yeah.
They just don't.
They had Michigan State had a drive, I think, to take a 7-0 lead, and then Indiana's coming back and get a bad tip, and there's a pick six.
Yeah, so the quarterback gets a little rushed. He throws it to his running back, who deflects it.
Yeah.
And he deflects it directly to an out-of-position defensive back who returns it for a touchdown.
Surprise.
Surprise. Yeah, I think the main storyline from this game from a Michigan perspective is that LJ Scott doesn't play and Michigan State
cannot do anything on the ground.
Which is the same as it was against Arizona State. You know, it's the same as it was against Utah State. Right. They haven't done anything on the ground.
Their offensive line, they've been decent in pass protection, but they just can't move people. So it's really going to be on Lewerke. And by God, if it is third and short, a speed option is coming.
They did it on fourth down.
They do it.
Yeah.
Whenever they need to convert, it's going to be speed option. So for the love of God... Get beat some other way, but not by like letting Michigan State run speed option with Brian Lewerke.
So Jamie's been kind of pumping Stevie Scott a little bit, and he's had a few good games leading into this one, and he has 11 carries for 18 yards. And while
he didn't have the touchdown,
a lot of that pass is probably Michigan State, but Peyton Ramsey throws 46 times, which seems just kind of a lot when maybe you had a running back that's kind of breaking out. So you have to think that
1.6 yards a carry.
Yeah, but I mean,
like, I kind of feel like most teams should just throw it against Michigan State's defense, and then.
Well, and they did have, what's his name? Oh, this is a great name.
Wop
Filyar had 13 catches for 148 yards.
Yeah, they have had problems in both games against Arizona State and Indiana covering anyone who's breaking inside.
So run to keep them honest, but
I wouldn't even
look downfield.
Like, just run play action, and then let's see what Grant Perry and Zach Gentry can do.
Yeah, or either wide receiver that is starting to take the top.
Or like do the thing where you put Peoples Jones in the slot and see how they react to that, because they can't run quarters if that's going to be the case.
Yeah,
they can't match either of their safeties up against Peoples Jones in man coverage. That would be, they'd just not happening.
Yeah, and you're right about Gentry. He's also just a mismatch. You have those two guys, and you put him in the slot.
Patterson, like, I don't, Michigan State is so run-focused that, I think they take advantage of the fact that college football teams just kind of have this, like, impulse that, I need to run the ball now. And I would definitely pass to open up the run against Michigan State. Finally, Wisconsin 28, Iowa 17. Wisconsin escapes the death zone that is Kinnick
at night. Yeah.
In an ugly game that opens up towards the end a little bit. I tweeted out during the game that Nate Stanley was averaging 15 yards an attempt, and at that point he had 12 attempts, which kind of says it all. Their backup tight end, I guess he's their number two tight end, Hawkinson, has 125 yards on three catches that are excellent catches and throws, and they're just
a couple arm punts from Stanley on those.
Wasn't it? I mean, there was, I distinguish between an arm punt and a high arced ball that lands perfectly in your wide receiver's hands.
Okay.
Like, the arm puntiness is just you're throwing it up and saying 500. That was a great throw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he really hit those guys well, but they get, almost nothing from their wide receiver core.
Yeah.
And then they just keep running the ball. I was like, what are you doing, Tom Brown? Oh.
I mean, that's Iowa, and that's Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah. And then, they kind of have Taylor corralled for most of this game, and then by the end of it, he's got 113 for 25 carries for 113 yards. And, like, this looks like a comfortable Wisconsin victory, but I don't know. I mean, Iowa couldn't field a punt to save their lives. They have
They had the
dumbest ever muff punt event in history, where the ball is almost literally about to be blown dead, and then some guy galumps in from off screen and is like, let me kick this, and it's just like, what are you doing, and that was one of Wisconsin's touchdowns, so that was a short
field. That was their second touchdown, I think.
Yeah, that puts them up 14-10, and Iowa cannot have that happen if they're going to beat Wisconsin.
The thing to me that's a little more disconcerting is Hornibrook goes 17 of 22, 205, 9.3, and three touchdowns, no picks. I mean,
they're also running not Mario. Mario Ojemudia's little brother is one of their starting corners.
Okay.
And he's not good.
But he's still got to make all those throws, and he's not missing guys.
I mean, Hornibrook is the guy, if you leave guys open, he will fit it in between the one and the six on your jersey.
So this doesn't move the needle for you on him at all?
I've been a pro Hornibrook person for a long time. So if he's not throwing interceptions, he's the best quarterback in the Big Ten.
Okay.
And that's always the question. But I just don't believe in Iowa's pass coverage this year. Like, just their personnel is just like, I don't think they can pull this off. Like, they don't have, I mean, the past, like, 4 or 5 years, they've had an NFL corner the whole time. And I don't think they have that guy this year. Not at all. So, but they do have A.J. Epinesa. They have a couple of other defensive ends who aren't as highly touted but are really effective. So they're going to get after some people. They just couldn't do it sufficiently enough against a team that is run first and is going to put in a bunch of tight ends and is going to be able to chip some guys. So,
well, the interesting thing I saw in our tweet about this was that had they won this game, they'd go to Happy Valley, and then they don't really get anyone else on their schedule.
It's basically Iowa?
Yeah, it's all Big Ten West teams, and I think it's Maryland or something is one of their other crossovers. And so if they win this game, they basically can just punt the Penn State game and still win the Big Ten West, which then that would be of potential interest to Michigan. But aside from that,
yeah, I think the decks are now clear for Wisconsin.
It would seem to be the case.
Like, who else in their division is going to even mount a challenge? If they get the weird Purdue, maybe.
Weird Purdue.
That's your best shot.
Northwestern's going to come and shock somebody.
Oh, yeah.
At some point.
I mean, I don't know.
And then blow a game that they should win.
21-7 against Duke. And just like,
and you didn't even talk about Akron.
Well, that's true. Well, I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like if they come up against a good defense, that seems to be, like, they're probably going to get 7 to 17 points. And that's going to be tough to win with.
So it's
but
Badgers.
They do have the gas.
Badgers forward.
Yeah, I mean, what else could it possibly be? All right. Thanks for calling in, Jamie. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Have a good week. Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook. Eat at Wendy's.
Who's got it better than